Welcome to the FishExplorer.com's Fly Fishing Podcast. This is a show where we talk about everything from how to fish, where to fish, what to fish for, and whatever else we want to talk about. We will talk to the legends of fishing, guides, fishermen, and anybody else who wants to talk fishing. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. This week's podcast is really a very good one, but we had some technical issues going on with the phone lines and so forth, so some of it may be hard to hear, hard to listen. You might have to listen a little closer, turn up your radio a little bit, or podcast player or whatnot, but it is something you will enjoy. I apologize for the quality. We'll try and do better next time, but when you get to interview a gentleman like this, you take it how you get it. And it is very cool and a great one to listen to. So we'll go ahead and get ready and enjoy. Good morning, evening, afternoon, everybody. This is Tim Fishman Emery here on the Fish Explorer 5 Fishing Report. And this week's report, our podcast, is definitely a fly fishing oriented podcast. And if you're just finding Fish Explorer podcast on the World Wide Web, you need to go check out the website, www.fishexplorer.com. We are the largest resource of fishing information in Colorado. We have over 150 lakes featured on our page, 20-plus river sections, where to fish, how to fish, where to put your boat in, what the camping regulations are, what the costs are, conditions reports, and all kinds of other fishing-related information. And this week's podcast is a very cool podcast for me because I am interviewing one of the legends of the sport who I have been reading his books since about 1995. Trying to master how to fish better, how to tie flies better, and I have not done either nearly to the level of my guest, Mr. AK Best. AK, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the show. Hey, AK, you grew up in Iowa. How'd you start getting into fly fishing and fishing in general?
I grew up on an Iowa farm and had hay fever so bad I knew I could never be a farmer. And about the same time in my early teens, I developed bad hay fever.
Mm-hmm.
And learned how to play the saxophone. So my band director in high school and a superintendent decided I should go to school and learn how to be a high school band director. So I was a music major at Drake University in Des Moines. Worked my way through school playing in dance bands, which was another education
mm-hmm.
all to itself. I learned a lot about people and a lot about music, and I had the opportunity to play with some very fine musicians. This was during the age when the big band era was beginning to fold, and a lot of those guys were dropping off the big bands going to Drake. And so I sat on a bandstand with guys from Gene Krupa's band and Ray Anthony's band and Les Brown's band, and I really learned how to play. And then started teaching in near Des Moines, got drafted, went to the Army, spent my time in Japan where I was in a headquarters band, and we played TV broadcast every Saturday with a big band. That was a lot of fun. And then when I got out, I finished my master's and went to teach again. And one day my superintendent came to me and said, the city of Des Moines is going to gobble up our district, so I'd like to help you get a new job.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. And that's how I ended up in Alpena, Michigan, where I burned out. I was involved in too many things musical. I was seeing a shrink and a marriage counselor, and I decided, you know what, this is not fun anymore. So I quit. In the meantime, I was coming to Colorado and West Yellowstone to work in a fly shop and fish. And one day the owner of the fly shop here in Boulder said, I got good news and bad news. I said, well, I just quit my job. What's the bad news? He said, well, I just sold the store. I said, well, now what am I going to do? And the summer, and he said, well, the guy who bought it wants you to come manage it.
Well, that's good.
But I thought it was good. You know, he paid my move and everything, but he wouldn't let me manage it and put it down the toilet in 2 years, and that's when I started tying flies full-time. And I put 2 daughters through school and paid house payments and bridge loan payments. And that's when you learn how to tie flies.
So were you tying commercially for production?
When I had already begun tying flies commercially when I lived in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And I would walk into a fly shop, and out in my car, I had a box full of flies. And I would walk in and look at these flies and see what he was out of and say, gee, you don't have any number 16 atoms. Would you like to see mine? What's he going to say? No? And so that's how I never advertised. That's how I did it.
Uh-huh.
And it worked.
So tell me, I tie flies, but I'm just good enough to tie what I need to. I have never been able to have the attention span to sit there and tie 2 or 3 dozen flies at a time. For some reason, a beer gets in my way or a football game gets in my way or something like that. What's kind of the thought behind being able to sit down and tie and really get the consistency you do?
The consistency, I just wrote a little piece for this for a little magazine out east.
Mm-hmm.
Is you relate everything on your fly to a certain part of the hook. Whether it be the length of the hook eye, you need to save that for the head. The length of the shank, the distance of the hook gap, I always save that for the wings and hackle collar. The tail length is usually the length of the entire hook. But I never use one of those old proportion charts because insects can't read. And but I began taking photos and found out that none of the proportion charts were accurate. So I started taking photos of the naturals and tying my flies to match those proportions. And for example, the tails on almost every mayfly done is longer than they're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
The wings are often taller than they're supposed to be. So that's where I began to get my consistency, is by measuring. Look at the photo, measure the different parts of the fly against the hook itself, and then and tie it on. It became more fly assembly than fly tying in that respect, because I would lay out the hooks I wanted to tie. I'd lay out the tailing material, the wing material, the body material, and the hackle. I would size all the hackle ahead of time, and that gave me consistent-looking hackle collars. If I picked the wings ahead of time, I had consistent-looking wings. And those are just the little things you can do to make your fly. You want the second fly to look exactly like the first one,
mm-hmm.
No matter if you're an amateur or a professional.
Huh. That is something I don't do.
No time. You'll be amazed at how good your second fly will look. If you use the hook proportions to gauge how long or wide or big or fat the fly you're going to tie is going to be.
Right.
Some flies have little skinny bodies. The green drake, the famous green drake hatch in Frying Pan and the Roaring Fork, has a very meaty-looking body.
Mm-hmm.
But their tails are too short.
Mm-hmm.
And their wings are too tall.
Uh huh. That's
broken charts.
Hey, so let me ask you this, because I am starting to, as I've been involved with Fish Explorer, get to know more people in the conventional side and talk about different things about how to catch more fish consistently. And maybe this is wrong, or maybe this is just an opinion, I think that I'm not as concerned with my fly proportions or the look of my fly as I am with the presentation of my flies. What's your kind of thought on that?
I got a great story about that.
Okay.
During the famous green drake hatch on the Frying Pan, I saw a guy on the far bank standing up high on the bank. It's about 8 feet taller, above the river.
Mm-hmm.
He's wearing a bright yellow straw hat and a white T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
He's fishing a number 12 Adams. The rest of us are there with our anatomically correct green drakes. dressed in camel.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't be seen. This guy is catching as many fish or more than anybody else. It was presentation. He's just a damn good fisherman.
Uh-huh.
And oftentimes that makes up for anything else that he might be lacking.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe you can put everything on the hook that looks as much like the natural as possible, and your presentation is good, you're going to catch more fish.
Right. Right. And I think that's really kind of twofold there, that you just have to develop your presentation, and then everything else follows with it. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, to a point. Presentation is good. I watch a lot of people casting, and their line unrolls on the water.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen this on TV recently in some famous Colorado ads about fishing in Colorado.
I think I've seen that ad.
This guy's casting, and his entire line unrolls on the water.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's got drag before the fly even gets there.
Uh-huh. I think I know what ad you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's, you know, one of my pet peeves being in the business long enough is bad TV ads with bad fishermen in it.
Yeah.
Or just because they look like they're good, they're pretty looking guys who look like they should know how to fish.
Well, they got all this stuff on.
Yeah.
You know, they just came right out of Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yeah. Yep.
And they're casting.
Yeah. Yep.
But they look good.
Yeah.
Probably a friend of somebody in the studio.
Exactly. Or an actor that looks good for TV.
Right. Yeah. He's got a good face.
Yeah. He had to pay his union dues and he got in.
Right.
Hey, AK, what are some of your favorite waters to fish?
In the last few years, I've been spending a lot of time up in Rocky Mountain Park.
Mm-hmm.
I won't tell you exactly where I fish.
That's fine.
But up in the park, there are some enormous brown pounds, brown trout. That'll go 8 to 10 pounds.
And really?
Catch them on a dry fly. My favorite fly to fish up there when I do that is a beetle. A winged beetle.
Mm-hmm.
All beetles on the water have a pair of wingtips sticking out the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why this hasn't been done, but it's a killer. People take a picture of an insect, they take it out of the water and put it on a leaf or a stick or a rock and take a photo. Then they tie their flies like that. Well, mm-hmm. If fish ate from twigs and leaves and rocks, that'd be fine. But they eat from the water. So you have to observe how the fly appears on the water.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying those beetles that we see in all the shops and everything that don't have those back wingtips are pretty much off, and it's amazing they catch fish sometimes.
It is. They work, but the winged beetle works better.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I tried this, I spent a lot of time laying on my belly looking at the water. And I noticed that every beetle that came by had a pair of wingtips sticking out. And then I remembered when I was a kid, I'd catch a ladybug, and I'd let it crawl across my knuckle, and I'd put the other finger up and crawl on that one. And pretty soon, the wing shell would split open slightly, wingtips would pop out, and puff it. Well, when they're on the water, the wing shells are slightly split, the wingtips are out, but they can't be gone. They're ready to fly, but can't. And so I started trying that, and I went up to Rocky Mountain Park early one Sunday morning before the sun was even up, and I fished a little stream up there, and in 2 hours I caught something like 24 trout. I lost 3 beetles to fish I could not turn. So I tied some more, and I called my friend John Gearock, and I said, we're going up to the park tomorrow. I'll supply the fly.
Uh-huh.
He said, what do you mean, fly? So we only need one. So I gave him a half a dozen winged beetles, and we went up there, and we leapfrogged each other. We each caught around 20 fish in about 2 hours. Now, some of them were little guys that you sling all over your shoulder when you set the hook, but some of them you just can't turn.
Right.
biggest fish I ever landed up there during this was a 27-inch brown.
Wow.
Yeah. It was, it made me a very strong believer in that wings on beetles are important.
You know what's amazing about listening to that story? So I, 2007, fished the Fly Fishing National Championships, and we fished Parvin Lake. And I was on the, I think, northeast corner of that lake, and I watched beetle after beetle get blown out of the trees and come sweeping across that lake. And I put on a beetle pattern and did not get a single fish. In fact, I got skunked on that in that section. And I was so PO'd, and I watched these beetles, and you know, I didn't really see a lot of fish rising to them either. So I wasn't all that concerned, but now you telling that story, and I haven't thought about this since that day, but that makes a lot of sense that I was fishing it the wrong way when I fished my beetles.
It just wasn't all there.
Yeah.
You wouldn't leave the tails off a mayfly done.
No. No.
You wouldn't tie, there's a lot of stuff you wouldn't do. Put everything on the hook you possibly can that looks like the natural.
Right. Right. Amazing, amazing stuff. Hey, AK, let's talk about, you know, do you do much warm water fishing yet?
When I grew up in Iowa, I fished a lot of warm water. I grew up during the Depression, and my mom and dad and I would go to the river and catch catfish and carp.
Mm-hmm.
It was free food.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started teaching, I got into fly fishing a little, gills and bass mostly. And then took a job up in northern Michigan, and I discovered brook trout, and it changed my life.
Mm-hmm. So we fish a lot. Yeah, I've been fishing a lot of warm water here. For bass and crappie and wiper and so forth, and I've been trying to tailor my patterns towards those warm water fish now. Have you been doing some of that?
I haven't been doing much warm water fishing because after I discovered trout, it just became so much more exciting for me. Especially living here in Colorado, where you can fish dry flies year-round.
Right.
Know, there's a midge hatch every day. I don't care where you go in the state. There's a midge hatch every day.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the tailwaters.
Mm-hmm. Especially smack dab in the middle of winter.
Yep. You got it. Some of the best fishing I ever had was in up on the frying pan just below the dam, the place they call the Flats, where it's big and wide and shallow. I was out there one day in January some years ago, and there was a size 18 black midge hatch. I don't count fish anymore, but I caught more than I had any right to. And it was just a glorious day. Dry fly fishing in January. Where else can you do that?
I hear you. I've done that before, too. And then 2 hours later, the storm came in, and I had to sit in my car for a couple hours.
Yep. There you go. Good fly fishing weather is also good duck hunting weather.
And what's, you know, we're here in the, you know, second week of November, and it's finally looks like it's winter's trying to get here, but it's not all that bad.
Not quite here yet.
No. No, it would actually probably be a very good day to be on the river, and maybe you're going to the river today, but...
No, I got to tie flies today.
And I've got to work. Bummer. Hey, AK, we're going to wrap things up, but tell me one good story that you have recently, without anything that you can think of, that is... I'm actually going to leave it up to you and just listen to a story.
Well, it was a day of humility. The last time I fished this year was up at a private lake. It's called Sylvandale.
Mm-hmm.
And it's west of Loveland. The Big Thompson River flows through a ranch there.
Sure.
And I was up there with a very good friend. I won't give you his name. And he was catching fish. And I said, what the hell are you using? He said, an olive quill parachute. So I tied on an olive quill parachute, and I couldn't catch a thing. And finally, we're taking a coffee break up at a picnic table. And he said, well, your damn fly came apart. I only landed 6 fish on it. I said, well, let's see it. Well, it wasn't an olive quill parachute. It was a red quill parachute. And I said, damn you. Are you colorblind or what? I never caught a fish all day, but I saw my best friend catch a lot of fish on a fly I'd tied. So that was some good out of that.
That's funny. It's still good to know that somebody who's been fishing as long as you have can go out there with your best friend, get some humility left in you, and not catch a fish. And still, we fish as much as possible, right?
Right. My good friend John Gearock and I often get asked, how'd you guys do today? And no matter what we caught, if none, he'll say, we got our share.
Yep. I've got the pleasure of interviewing John as well, and you guys are funny, and I think most of us as fly fishermen have grown up in the last 15, 20 years reading your guys' books and being entertained by you guys, and you've brought a level of just complete joy to the sport, and has made it an easy transition to tell people about it and tell stories about it and enjoy it on a higher level, I think, for everybody. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. I have fished with people. When I lose the fish, I watch one guy throw his rod and reel into the bushes. And then I've fished with people who lose a big fish and giggle and say, well, I fooled him. Me, that's it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I agree. Well, AK, people can find you all over the internet. They can get your flies at a majority of shops in the Colorado area. Go ahead.
Mike Clark up in Lyons. He's a guy who makes bamboo fly rods. He's the only guy I tie for now.
Okay. Okay.
So all the flies in my books can be purchased from Mike.
From Mike?
I've had people call me and want me to tie them a dozen flies, and I said, well, I'd like to, but that's cutting Mike's legs off.
Okay.
Here's how you reach Mike.
Yep. And how do you reach Mike?
His phone number is 303-823-6402.
All right, say that one more time.
303-823-6402.
Fantastic. All right. Well, we'll give
sell your flies just to make a sale.
Good. We'll give Mike a plug because I know he's done great things, and I know I've been through past the shop, but it's been closed every time I've been past there. But it's been early in the morning on the way up to the hill, so.
Yep.
But it's good stuff. I appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll get caught up at some of the shows this year, and if there's anything we can ever do for you, please let us know.
Thank you very much. Good talking to you.
All right. Thanks, AK.
Again, I record these podcasts a lot, and I get to talk to famous people and game fly fishing industry and fishing industry, and AK Best is one of those guys that you just have to go up and talk to, and everybody you talk to and you meet in the fishing industry is really a nice guy. I actually ran into AK Best on the Frying Pan, oh, this is probably 12 years ago now, and he came walking out of the I was standing next to the hog trough waiting to get in, and he came walking out, and he said, how's it going? I said, great, how are you? He said, and it's going well, catching some fish. I said, yep. And he kind of walked away. I didn't realize who he was at the time. Didn't get a chance to talk to him again, but went to the retailer show like the next day and saw him walking around. I was like, oh, I knew that guy.
That's all I remember about him. But he is a nice guy, and I met him a couple weeks ago at a Trout Unlimited event and sat at a booth and talked to him, listened to some stories, and he's a great guy, and you definitely have to go get his flies because they are some of the best. Mike Clark's shop up in Lyons is the place to go get them, and I'm sure he'll take care of you. And you know, if there's one town that if you're fishing or you have nothing to do one day, go up to Lyons, Colorado, hang out. You may run into AK, John Gearock, Mike Clark. It's kind of like this little fishing town that everybody knows about, but nobody really goes to. But it's got a great brewery in it. Oscar Blues is there, and it's a cool little town. And then you can go fishing up pretty much anywhere, and the St. Vrain runs right through it. Which is good stuff. So, thanks for putting up with kind of the weird sounds in there and some of the fade-aways, and we'll try and get a better connection next time we do it and so forth. So, middle of November, weather's trying to turn. They said it was going to snow a bunch. I don't see it happening. Weather's kind of perfect. It would be a great day. This time of year is a great blooming olive hatches up there on most of the rivers. And then the warm water stuff is starting to cool down, so those fish are really getting active. And with this storm and the cold front coming in, they're going to get excited. So right now is the time to get out there and go fishing. Like always, if you have questions or comments, please email me at tim@fishexplorer.com. We'll do whatever we can to get your questions answered and really, you know, have a good time. So, again, tim@fishexplorer.com, and we will talk to you soon. In the meantime, make sure you go out there and go fishing.